Isaiah 2. The word that Isaiah the son of Amoz saw concerning Judah and Jerusalem. It shall come to pass in the latter days that the mountain of the house of the Lord shall be established as the highest of the mountains, and shall be lifted up above the hills, and all the nations shall flow to it. And many peoples shall come and say, Come, let us go up to the mountain of the Lord, to the house of the God of Jacob, that he may teach us his ways, and that we may walk in his paths. For out of Zion shall go the law, and the word of the Lord from Jerusalem. He shall judge between the nations, and shall decide disputes for many peoples. And they shall beat their swords into plowshares, and their spears into pruning hooks. Nation shall not lift up sword against nation, neither shall they learn war any more. O house of Jacob, come, let us walk in the light of the Lord. Isaiah 53:4. Surely he has borne our griefs and carried our sorrows, yet we esteemed him stricken, smitten by God, and afflicted. But he was wounded for our transgressions. He was crushed for our iniquities. Upon him was the chastisement that brought us peace, and with his stripes we are healed. All we, like sheep, have gone astray. We have turned, every one, to his own way. And the Lord has laid on him the iniquity of us all.
Good evening. Good evening. My name's David. It's good to be with you. I oversee this congregation. It was striking. I flicked onto the BBC News website a couple of hours ago, and the major headline was the Remembrance Day celebrations going on today. It's very much still a very important thing for us as a nation, isn't it? When an American died in World War II, notification of their death was sent to their next of kin. And it looked like this. Don't worry, let me read it out. It reads this. In grateful memory of Private First Class Willie R. Stollings, who died in the service of his country in the European area. He stands in the unbroken line of patriots who have dared to die that freedom might live and grow and increase its blessings. Freedom lives, and through it, he lives, in a way that humbles the undertakings of most men. Signed, Franklin D. Roosevelt, President of the United States of America. The achievement of the Allied victories in 1918 and 1945 reverberate down the generations. Because of their victory, we here in the UK enjoy the freedom that we do. Because they wouldn't stand for a cruel dictatorship, we are not subject to one. We have problems. But thank God for the problems we don't have and for the freedom we do enjoy. And we honour those who paid such a price to win it for us, and rightly so. And of course, war didn't end in 1945. Today, many serve in wars throughout the world for the cause of justice, daily risking their lives. And we honour them today. But of course, the fact that they are fighting, the fact that they are needed, is really very sad indeed. This map shows us the conflicts happening in the world today. Orange is the conflicts with fewer than 1,000 deaths per year. Is in red are the wars and conflicts with 1 to 10,000 deaths per year. And the maroon is major wars of 10,000 or more deaths per year. War is a very sad fact of life. Every year of human history, a map like this could have been drawn. The colours would move around, but war is a sad fact of life on our planet. On this day last year, this was the front page of the Daily Mail. It's grimly ironic. Remembrance terror plot. Four terror suspects were being held by police amid fears of a Remembrance Sunday gun plot. Of all days. But war is a sad fact of life, isn't it? And one more example we could take is the tiny nation of Judah. You might not have heard of Judah, but the historical background to the Bible passage we had read is the Assyrian Empire and its relationship to Judah in the 8th century BC. And why did Judah need to hear these words about an end to all war? Well, because Judah had been threatened by war for most of its existence. And so do you see, 800 BC or 2015 AD, war is a fact of life. And this speaks of a broken world. This speaks of our broken world. Because this fact of life, this thing we call war, this one-syllable word so easily spoken and so often a headline, it is a word of horror. Consider the world wars when ordinary people like you and I faced dehumanizing carnage. An officer wrote of his experience on the beaches of Dunkirk in May 1940. Down on the beach, you immediately felt yourself surrounded by a deadly, evil atmosphere. A horrible stench of blood and mutilated flesh pervaded the place. There was no escape from it. Not a breath of air was blowing to dissipate the appalling odour that arose from the dead bodies that had been lying on the sand, in some cases for several days. We might have been walking through a slaughterhouse on a hot day. The darkness which hid some of the sights of horror from our eyes seemed to thicken this dreadful stench. It created the impression that death was hovering around, very near at hand. Of course, examples of the horror of warfare could be multiplied. Just listen to any accounts of a concentration camp, if you can bear to. And yet the misery of war continues today in our broken world. Warfare itself, then, is horrific. So, of course, is the damage that warfare causes. At the Battle of Somme, 1916-17, 420,000 British soldiers were killed. That's 100,000 more than the population of Bromley. There were 60,000 casualties on the first day. Can you imagine? 60,000 precious people killed. And all for an advance of just 5 miles. Huge numbers of precious people die in warfare. And each one matters. Today's atheistic scientists would have it, wouldn't they, that a human is a meaningless bag of molecules, the product of nothing more than random molecular mutations and reproductive filtering. But I wonder if they feel the same when someone they love dies. See, if you've lost someone you love, you know that they're not simply meaningless molecules. They're beloved brothers or sisters, fathers or mothers, granddads or grandmas, and friends. For some here, I'm sure, every day you feel this deep sadness of being without a loved one who lost their life in a war. We should all mourn this tragic loss of life. Each who died had a name and a birthday, a unique fingerprint, a unique personality and potential. Whatever their nationality, whether friends or so-called enemies, whatever side they were on, they matter. If some material object can be priceless, a vase or a painting made of canvas and paints, how much more a human life? Each one is priceless. So the death of each one is very sad. Yes, the damage of war is very great. War leaves behind families which forever grieve or who are torn apart. War leaves many physically impaired, doesn't it? Or mentally scarred. The bloodshed and destruction of war can destroy the fabric of whole nations. Surely then, if this is a world where war is normal, then this is a broken world. Of course, yes, war is the occasion for many shards of light, of virtue, of courage, of self-sacrifice, of a country rallying together for a cause bigger than any individual. Perhaps that's one reason we continue to enjoy Dad's Army. There's a new Dad's Army movie coming out soon, isn't there? And we can read about some of the hardships, but also the shards of light in war in this book, which has been written by a member of our congregation. It's out in the church centre for sale, written by Bernard Osborne, and he served in the Second World War. Well worth getting a copy of. But let us never forget that shards of light, though they do exist in war, they only exist when it is dark. War may be necessary, but surely a world where war is necessary is a world gone wrong. And so now, consider that war, this thing that's both awful and endless, is caused by human beings. What is wrong with us that we can't stop fighting each other? I know these are hard things to think about. Downton Abbey's Dowager Countess put it like this: all this endless thinking, it's very overstated. I blame the war. Before 1914, nobody thought about anything at all. You can hear more from her this evening, I think, can't you? But of course, that is rubbish, isn't it? War has always raised serious questions, and it is healthy to face up to them. Not that I dare say that to her face, of course. Though the world is always like this, many feel that it should not be. John Lennon was one. "Imagine there's no countries," he sang. "It isn't hard to do. Nothing to kill or die for, and no religion too. Imagine all the people living life in peace. You may say I'm a dreamer, but I'm not the only one. I hope someday you'll join us and the world will be as one." Now, Lennon isn't the only one who dreams of a world without war. But there is in the Bible the promise that such a world is not a dream. There is the promise that God will make such a world a reality. God, through his servant Isaiah, gave the tiny, long-suffering nation of Judah a promise of a world without war, and it's a promise for us too. And so we go from our broken world to a perfect world. If you've closed it, would you open up your Bible to page 685? Back in Isaiah chapter 2. And look with me at verse 4. "The day is coming when all the nations shall," halfway down, "beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks. Nation shall not lift up sword against nation, neither shall they learn war anymore." Now this is the language of their day, but the meaning is clear to us today. It's the promise of a world without war. You just notice there are no swords, so the means of war have disappeared. Swords are not lifted up, so the practice of war has disappeared. And there's even no training for warfare. "Neither shall they learn war anymore." So even the mentality of war has gone. It's a world without war. And instead of brandishing weapons of war, people operate farming tools, plowshares and pruning hooks. So this is a world where diverse people live in harmony. They enjoy an ideal environment and partnership and production and plenty and peace. War is but a long-lost memory. Surely this is a world we all want. And something else makes this future world different to the world of today, which is this, is that God is everywhere. This world is called, look at what it says in verse 2, the mountain of the house of the Lord. In verse 3, let's go up to the mountain of the Lord. The people of this world are ruled by the Lord. Let's read from verse 3. Come, let us go up to the mountain of the Lord, to the house of the God of Jacob, that he may teach us his ways, and that we may walk in his paths. For out of Zion shall go the law and the word of the Lord from Jerusalem. He shall judge between the nations and shall decide disputes for many peoples. Now, for some, as we know, a perfect world does not have God in it. I think that's true about Lenin's vision, isn't it? Nothing to kill or die for, and no religion, too. We know that religion can be a dirty word. As it happens, the claim that religion is the number one cause of wars is not accurate. There's a comprehensive encyclopedia of wars, and it tells us that just 7% of wars involves a religious cause. But still, much bad has been done in the name of God. And do you see here in Isaiah 2, that is a travesty? Because according to Isaiah, where peace is the fruit, well, the God of the Bible is the root. The world without war is populated by people who say, verse 3, come, let us go up to the mountain of the Lord, that he may teach us his ways, and that we may walk in his paths. You see, peace only comes amongst those who recognize the one true God as the Lord of all. Only a true relationship with the Lord issues in a true peaceful society. Now, on the question of when this perfect world will come, Isaiah is a bit slippery, shall we say. It shall come, he says in verse 2, in the latter days. Do you see that? And as the Bible unfolds, we learn that the answer is something like this. It's now, and it's also not yet, which sounds about as vague as Isaiah. Here's what I mean. There are glimpses of Isaiah's vision being realized today, this world of peace. We see it, though, where men, women, and children live with the true God as their God, and where his word is their rule. Now, this is happening, would you believe it, even here at Christ Church Bromley. Now, we are riddled with failings. But God has brought us together under his rule, different nations and races, united under God. And our King Jesus, who told Simon Peter to put his sword away, he has made peace with us while we were still his enemies. And flowing from that, Jesus teaches us to love our enemies and seek reconciliation, even when we're the ones who've been wronged. And of course, this place is just one place where this is happening in our world. So do you see, this vision is partially realized now, but also not yet. Because Isaiah's description, it breaks the boundaries of anything in this world. Verse 2, the mountain of the Lord is the highest, so he is exalted over all people. Now, we don't see that in today's world, but one day it will happen. Also, the peace that we see here is between nations. It is then universal. So all around the globe, there is peace. And what a prospect that is. One thing more, the peace of this coming world, it never ends. And this is a picture by a provocative artist called Pavel Kuczynski. This is called Peace. Peace in our world doesn't last. Ceasefires are often just temporary. One war might end, but another is raging somewhere else, or another is beginning somewhere else. But in the world to come, we're told, Nation shall not lift up sword against nation, neither shall they learn war anymore. War is not even a possibility. Peace and harmony, it's the only state anyone will ever know. Can you imagine that? It's a place of eternal peace because the God of peace reigns. Well, yes, a world is coming where this is a reality. God himself declares it. Verse 2, he says, just there at the beginning, it shall come to pass. And so the question for us is, how do we get there? How do we get there? Our passport to this world of peace is a gift that we must receive. And so finally, the one who can get us there asked earlier, what is wrong with us such that the horror of war keeps happening? I'm not an avid listener, but on Gardener's Question Time, they'll tell us that bad fruit indicates a bad root. And it's that needs treating. The bad root of humanity is hinted at in Isaiah's vision. And in this promised world, peace is enjoyed by people who submit to the good rule of God. Failing to submit to God, then, is the root cause of our conflicts. Many like to think that they have natural access to God. Well, there certainly is a God, but we do not have natural access to him, because by nature we keep him at arm's length. There is a dividing wall between us and God by nature. Instead of living by God's word, instead of verse 4 coming under the judgments of God, instead of him being our king, friends, we by nature rule ourselves. Isaiah 53 makes that very clear. All we like sheep have gone astray. We've turned, everyone, to his own way. I guess some might blame war on God. But actually many soldiers saw it differently. A man called Werner Simonsen was one. He was a German. He endured the Great War. And then later he was persecuted for resisting the Nazis. He said this: the evil in this world results from man's separation from God. It is not the fault of God. Now, we don't need to have fought in wars to carry scars from conflicts. Some of us can look back on the history of our relationships with others. Perhaps it's with parents, or a boyfriend or girlfriend, or loved ones in our lives. We look back on the pain that we've caused, or the pain that we've suffered. But these conflicts too happen when we live under our own direction rather than under God's wise direction. Because if I rule me and you rule you, then eventually we will clash. Werner Simonsen is right. The evil in this world results from man's separation from God. And the question we must ask then is, what is the solution? There was a man called Mitsuo Fushida who asked that question. Fushida, some may know, led the assault on Pearl Harbor in 1941. And later he penned a book called No More Pearl Harbor, and during which it occurred to him that the mess that the world was in was due to human nature. But this thought haunted him: who can change people? There's a music magazine, Rolling Stone. They describe the lyrics of Lennon's Imagine as 22 lines of graceful, plain-spoken faith in the power of a world united in purpose to repair and change itself. But surely that is a blind faith, a faith without grounds. Surely history shows we cannot change ourselves. Conflicts keep coming. But there is a solution. Isaiah tells us that Jesus Christ has won this battle on our behalf. Jesus can change us. He was pierced for our transgressions. He was crushed for our iniquities. Upon him was the chastisement that brought us peace. And with his wounds we are healed. All we like sheep have gone astray. We have turned everyone to his own way, and the Lord has laid on Jesus the iniquity of us all. Rejecting God is a crime that deserves punishment, but rather than you and I endure what we deserve on the cross, and out of sheer love, Jesus endured it for us. He was pierced for our transgressions. But of course, that was not all. Today we remember the fallen. Well, in the New Testament, we read these words: remember Jesus Christ, risen from the dead. Jesus rose from death with a glorious body that will never decay or die. And so the victory over sin and death is complete. God now offers you and I forgiveness for our rebellion, and what do we see in verse 5? Peace with him. There it is, the key to enjoying everlasting peace with one another is peace with God. And so the prospect of resurrection life in the world we all want, it can be ours. Jesus has secured it for us if we want it. Back in Isaiah chapter 2, when we hear what we must do about what Jesus has done. But down at verse 3. It's a call to the people of the world. Come, let us go up to the mountain of the Lord, to the house of the God of Jacob, that he may teach us his ways, and that we may walk in his paths. For out of Zion shall go the law and the word of the Lord from Jerusalem. Let us go up to the Lord. Let us have his word as our rule. Let's have this God as our God. Now, many here in this room have already done this, but I wonder if some know that they need to come to God today for the first time. Fushida asked, who can change people? And after the war, he read Luke's gospel. And in the story of the crucifixion, he came across Jesus' prayer, Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they are doing. And later he said this, I was impressed that I was one of those for whom Christ had prayed those words. The many men I'd killed had been slaughtered in the name of patriotism because I didn't understand the love that Christ wishes to implant in every heart. Right at the moment I read that prayer, I seemed to meet Jesus for the first time. I understood the meaning of his death as a substitute for my wickedness. And so in prayer I requested him to forgive my sins and change me from a bitter, disillusioned ex-pilot into a well-balanced Christian with purpose in living. And so in 1950, that 47-year-old man was forgiven and changed by God and could look forward to eternal peace in the new creation with all those who have come to God too. And Jesus, as much as anybody, warned that if we continue to hold God at arm's length, we will spend eternity far from God, a life of terrible exclusion. And so please, I urge you, if you haven't yet, go to God and begin a new life under his rule. Because when you do, well, for sure, waiting for you will be a place in the coming world of peace. Of course, it may be that you feel you need to know more. Do find out more. One great place to do that is to look at one of the Gospels, one of the lives of Jesus. And we've got a few of these on the table outside. Let me flag these up to you. They're replicas of the John's Gospels given to every one of those who served in the British Army in World War I. Take it. Read it. Let me mention too, this coming Wednesday, we have an event called Food for Thought here in the church centre from 7:45 to 9 o'clock. There's another opportunity to discover Jesus. Do come along. Make that a fixture in your diary. And as I say, many here have put their trust in the hand that will take them to the new creation. And if you are right to ache for that new creation. It's no wishful thinking. He will come and bring us to be with him in the wonderful world where God reigns. But just by the way, that's not the only word from Isaiah to those of us who are waiting. Here's verse 5. O house of Jacob, come, let us walk in the light of the Lord. Let us walk in the light of the Lord. Have we come into the light? Then walk in it. The people of God, this congregation, we are to be magnetic to the watching world. Wars and conflicts, they are constant on the news and in our lives. And in this dark world, we, God's people, together, male and female, old and young, those who would naturally be friends and those who wouldn't, we are to walk together in God's light and call on friends and family to come to the Prince of Peace. And so on the 11th day of the 11th month of 1918, the armistice was signed. 4 years of continuous, aggressive warfare was over. There's a man called W.G.S. Dobie. He fought in the Great War, and people often asked him what he did in the war, and his usual answer was, I ended it. What he meant was that he was the officer on duty at the British General HQ when news came in of the armistice, and he dictated a telegram intended for every British soldier. Read this. Hostilities will cease at 1100 hours today. Troops will stand fast at the line reached at that hour. There will be no fraternization with the enemy. Well, that was a great day. A day to remember. But wars, of course, didn't end in 1918, nor in 1945, and they haven't ended in 2015. They will not end until Jesus brings his people to his new creation. Because he died and rose to give us peace, one day he alone will say, I ended it forever. And so, remember the dead who fought, and the living who fight. But above all, remember Jesus Christ, risen from the dead. If our trust is in him today, we can look forward to a perfect world without war.